You're listening to The Sound Off. The Sound Off. With the Solomonster. Solomonster.
Michael Cole, if you take one more step with that computer, The Rock will get out of here and slap the taste so far out of your mouth, you'll never get it back.
You can't see me. You can't see me. You can't see me. What are you playing, peekaboo? You can't see me. I can see you. Can you see me?
This is a special President's Day, Monday edition of The Sound Off, episode 147, here on SEScoops.com on Monday, February 21st, 2011. That's right, it's 2-21-11, which everybody's been going gaga about for the last 3 weeks. Big night on Raw coming up tonight. I intentionally wanted to wait until the day after the pay-per-view here so I can give my thoughts on the Elimination Chamber show, which I did see and I thought was a pretty goddamn good show. Last night in Oakland. Not the best crowd in the world. In fact, I think the crowd sucked the cock, but a great show overall, and like I said before, big Raw tonight, and got a couple of different things to talk about, including Raw from last week, including something big that kind of happened. You might have heard. We'll get to that in a second. By the way, the biggest return of this past week was, in fact, not The Rock. It was SEScoops.com, which... My God, I have never been inundated by that many messages before about something that I had absolutely no control over. Basically, there was a glitch in the system, if you will. A little bit of a mistake made by our beloved webmaster that kind of makes me laugh. It makes me think of this animated GIF that you can probably find online if you search for it. And I guess... A while back on Raw, when Shawn Michaels and Triple H were doing the DX thing, the DX revival, there was a segment backstage that showed Shawn Michaels, who at the time was not very computer literate, although now he's tweeting all the time and he has a Facebook and this and that, but at the time he would get mocked because he didn't know shit about computers and technology, and they showed him backstage with one finger, his index finger, pushing down on a laptop button, and somebody online spliced that particular clip in with a clip of Mr. McMahon's limo exploding. So it's kind of like he pushes the button, doesn't know what he's doing, and blows up Mr. McMahon. And I kind of picture our webmaster with his index finger hitting a key on his keyboard and everything getting all fucked up and going awry. But the website seems to be back up and working now for pretty much everybody. So do not despair. SE Scoops is back up. And that was the biggest return of last week. But the second biggest return, of course, was in fact The Rock, who made his big comeback. First time in 7 years that The Rock has appeared live on Raw in the middle of the ring. He's done one or two taped segments since then. WrestleMania 23... leading up to that pay-per-view, the big Battle of the Billionaires, he recorded a segment that aired, I believe, on SmackDown, maybe Raw. And then he recorded a segment that aired on, I believe, the 10th anniversary of SmackDown about a year or two ago, where he made mention of the fact that he would love to host Raw, which never did come to fruition because of his schedule. But the last time we saw him in the flesh has been 7 years. You can break a mirror and have all of your bad luck expire in the amount of time it took for The Rock to come back. That's a long-ass time. And to put things in perspective for you, it was about 12 years since Bret Hart made his in-ring return to the WWE last year. And 7 years is not 12 years, but it's not that far behind. So it's been a while since we've seen The Rock. And basically, to me, it was... And I'm just going to give my thoughts now on that really quick. But... Rock's return last week and the reaction from that crowd in Anaheim was something I've never heard before. I've heard pops, I've seen big reactions from the crowd to guys like Hogan and Austin and other things, but to me, this was one of the all-time best Raw segments in history. The reaction, you know, when he came out and they played that remixed music, I kind of had the same reaction that I did when Bret Hart came back last year. Because you may recall, when Bret came out, his music, his iconic music was remixed. And at first, I was not a fan of that at all. I've warmed to his new theme music since then. So we heard The Rock saying, if you smell what The Rock is cooking, and then they went into this remix that I wasn't too fond of for the first 5 or 10 seconds. But again, it grew on me. You know, the announcers laid out, and they just let the moment speak for itself. The Rock looked exactly the same. He's basically bald now. So besides that, he looked pretty big. Not as jacked as he looked in some of those still photos from the fifth Fast and the Furious movie that he's in, which is coming out in April. But he looked like if he wanted to get back in the ring and kick some ass, he could do it at the drop of a hat, even though he's not planning on wrestling a match, which I'll get to in a second. It was nice he came out, had that heartfelt message as Dwayne for all of his fans. He made an interesting comment to the effect of he promised that he would never leave again. Not quite sure what he meant by that. I think it was kind of stupid for him to say that. Besides the people who will take that to mean that he's going to be on Raw every week, which obviously he won't be. It's not as though The Rock's movie career is over. He's still making movies. He's still very busy and doing other things. And I took that comment to mean you won't have to wait 7 years before you see The Rock again after WrestleMania. He'll pop in a little more often, and maybe he will host Raw at some point like he's hosting WrestleMania, and he'll do more stuff. But I don't know that I would have said that in those exact words, because that will lead people to believe that you're back for good, you're back to wrestle. The Rock has made it very clear that he is not going to wrestle. And again, I'm going to talk more about this in a second to all the fools out there who have been expressing immense disappointment at the fact that it does not appear that WWE is aiming for a Rock-John Cena match at WrestleMania. I'm going to talk more about that in a second. First, I want to get to the Elimination Chamber. Let's backtrack a little bit. Big pay-per-view last night from Oakland. What can I say? You know, this was a pay-per-view that I did not plan on buying. It's basically as good as these shows have been. There have been some pretty good chamber matches in the past. This pay-per-view is still a minor speed bump on the road, if you will, to WrestleMania. You know, the Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, those usually are a given for me. That February pay-per-view has in the past at times been something of a throwaway show. Now, it's taken on more of an importance with what is on the line in these chamber matches, even though I really think two chamber matches is overkill. But I caved, I ordered the pay-per-view, and I have to say, as much as I enjoyed the 40-man Rumble match last month, I actually thought it was a pretty good Royal Rumble, not the best. But I came out of it saying, you know what? People were wondering if 40 men was going to be too convoluted, and some people were upset that a heel in Alberto Del Rio walked away as the winner. I didn't mind that at all. Thought it was a pretty good pay-per-view. I didn't come away from that show the way that I came away from this show feeling, you know what? This event was worth the $45 that it cost me. And when that pay-per-view last night was over, I actually thought to myself, you know what? That was money well spent. That was a damn good pay-per-view show. It was not perfect, but you got two excellent chamber matches. I'd have to give the nod to the SmackDown one. I mean, that was just a phenomenal piece of business right there. So maybe that one was excellent or the Raw one was very good. But they were still outstanding matches. And we got two big returns on the show. Not big like The Rock or even Triple H or somebody like that. But we had two big returns as well. So it was a very newsworthy show. And I thought Miz and Jerry Lawler, for what it was, had a pretty good little title match. And Michael Cole took a bump during the match. What more could you possibly ask for? And I thought the outcome of the match was the right one. So let's just go back to the beginning of the show here. I took some notes on the Elimination Chamber. And first things first, Booker T. Now, I have not watched a full episode of SmackDown since Booker T started announcing. I just haven't been able to. So I've heard bits and pieces of him on commentary. And this was my first opportunity to really hear him call an entire show, but also this was his first live show, his first live pay-per-view with Jerry Lawler wrestling. The announce team was comprised of Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, and Booker T. And I gotta say, Booker is I like Booker. I do. Sometimes he's talking so fast, I don't understand what he's saying. when he slows it down a little bit, then I understand. He can be a bullet train sometimes because he's so excited. He's genuinely excited. Even though he's still not 100% up on the current product. But I think over the next couple of weeks, that will come a little more naturally to him. What I like about Booker T is, while he is by no means a flawless announcer, he is so different from Michael Cole and what Jerry Lawler has been forced to become and everybody else who has either had the passion beaten out of them or is getting yelled at in their ear, or they're so homogenized and they sound so scripted. Now, Booker T uses a lot of cliches, I will say that, but there's something fresh about his voice in that he doesn't sound like your typical WWE announcer, and that's a good thing. So for those of you who don't like Booker T, for your own reasons, give the guy a shot, because he's the freshest thing we've had in the announce booth in a long time, and maybe in a month or 2 months, he's going to be just like everybody else. But for now, I actually think he's very entertaining, and sometimes in a train wreck kind of way. The first chamber match was the SmackDown chamber match. Now, the Alberto Del Rio-Kofi Kingston match, my feed on pay-per-view, for whatever reason, was a little choppy, and I'd be lying if I said that I was looking forward most to that match, so I only saw bits and pieces of that match as I went back and forth here at home doing other things. It was a good match. It looked like it was a good match for whatever it was worth, and the right guy won. Del Rio won. He has to look strong going into the pay-per-view next month at WrestleMania. And as we saw at the end of the SmackDown Chamber match, there's a reason that that match went on first. The SmackDown Chamber comes up next. World Heavyweight title on the line. Edge is, in fact, an 11-time World Heavyweight Champion. So, again, these titles mean nothing the way they switch them. I thought this was a fantastic match. I just was so impressed by this match and virtually everybody in it. Everybody, it seemed, had their own moment, including Drew McIntyre. You know, Drew McIntyre was on the fast track to somewhere, and then he hit a wall and seemed to be de-pushed and didn't look very impressive on TV for the longest time. Now he's got this angle with Kelly, whatever's going on there. He came out of his pod, and he just went crazy. I mean, he looked psychotic in there. And people were chanting, holy shit. Some people were chanting for Drew. So for the time he was in there, when he first came out of his pod into the chamber match, Drew McIntyre looked like a badass. The last 8, 9, 10 minutes of the match, the stuff with Edge and Rey Mysterio was fantastic. It made me think back to the time that Edge inserted himself as a heel into one of the Elimination Chamber matches, which was probably about, if it wasn't last year, it was probably 2 years ago. I think it was the Raw match. If I remember correctly, Edge was the world champion and got beaten right away at the beginning of the SmackDown Chamber match, which was a big shock at the time. Came out later in the night, attacked, I think it was Kofi Kingston, who was coming into the cage, and took his spot. And if I remember correctly, Edge did win that match, but it came down to Edge and Rey Mysterio in that particular chamber match. So here we are again at the end of another Elimination Chamber. We have Edge and Rey Mysterio, who have been rivals, they've been friends. And what I liked about this was, of all the people in this match, these are the two guys who you knew could go over. Because Edge, obviously, most people probably knew that Edge was going to win this match, especially since they took the title off him and put it right back on him. I mean, if they would have had the title taken away from him again, that would have been, like I said, the title doesn't mean anything anyway. But the point is, Edge has had an issue of late with Del Rio. Rey Mysterio has had issues in the past with Alberto Del Rio. Conceivably, either one of these guys could have won the championship and gone on to defend it against Del Rio at WrestleMania. It would not have been as believable if it were, say, Drew McIntyre, or if it were Kane, or somebody like that. So there was a bit of unpredictability with all these hot falls and these near falls. And at one point, I thought maybe it was going on a little too long. It almost felt like a Ring of Honor match in a way, where they're doing all their moves, and they're doing moves that should just put a normal man out, and they just keep kicking out. But the crowd got into it, and what they did at the end there, and I know Rey Mysterio was all banged up. He's, you know, he's injured again, but he's going to gut it out for a match with Cody Rhodes at WrestleMania. By the way, he handpicked Cody Rhodes. He likes Cody, apparently, and he wants him to have a prominent spot at WrestleMania. So before people start bitching about Rey Mysterio being buried and put in a match at the biggest show of the year with Cody Rhodes, if you're going to blame anybody, blame Ray, because that was his decision. But anyway, this was a great match. Edge wins, retains the World Heavyweight Championship. Just an absolutely fantastic match. I cannot rave enough about this match. Del Rio comes out, and this is why his match went on first. He comes out now, back out, attacks Edge, puts him in the armbar, and all of a sudden, Christian's music hits, and out comes Christian, who's been out for about, gosh, I don't know, 5, 6 months maybe, after suffering a torn pec, and they credited his injury and storyline to Alberto Del Rio. So here it makes sense. Here's some more storyline continuity, like the continuity we've seen on Raw with Punk and Randy Orton, although that goes back 3 years, and this only goes back a couple of months. I was happy to see that they didn't forget about this. You know, when Christian made an appearance at the Slammies, he alluded to Del Rio putting him out of action then. He said he was going to get his revenge, and here he is. It just so happens that his former tag team partner and best friend, Edge, is also involved in this story. Now, I talked on this show a couple of weeks ago. I threw the idea out there that I would love to see perhaps a triple threat match at WrestleMania if Christian were to be able to make it back in time, because I think a lot of us would love to see Edge and Christian do something. And Christian has bad blood with Del Rio, and it would almost make sense to put him in here and make it a three-way. And I'm not a big fan of three-way matches and four-way matches for the championship at WrestleMania, but I don't see this match as the real WrestleMania main event. This is not the match that's going to end the show. So I actually would have no problem with it if they wanted to make this particular title match a triple threat and keep the other one a singles match. I don't know if they're going to do that. You know, perhaps they're going to stick with Edge versus Del Rio and have Christian in Edge's corner, and maybe Christian will turn heel and cost Edge the title or something. But if they made it a three-way, I wouldn't mind. Christian comes out, beats the shit out of Del Rio. The crowd reacted very well to him. And, you know, we saw Edge use his kill switch move at least one time in recent weeks. So I think they're building something here, and I'm intrigued by this. So everything about this segment was a complete and total thumbs up. It wasn't the first match, but it was still a pretty damn good way to get this show started. We saw the another big return on the show, which didn't get quite the reaction I thought it would, and that was the return of the former women's champion Trish Stratus, who apparently is going to be one of the trainers on the new season of Tough Enough, along with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Booker T. I don't know if there's going to be one more trainer. I think last time there were four. So now we know of three. Maybe it's just going to be the three of them. I don't know. But they made that announcement. Trish did some really bad comedy. It's not her fault. I'm sure this wasn't her idea. So it was good to see her. I think she got a lukewarm reaction from the crowd. Again, the crowd seemed to be into the near falls in the really good matches. When you have a really good match, you can get the crowd into it, even if it's a bad crowd. Maybe it was just my ears. Maybe if I was in the arena in Oakland, I would have a different perspective on this. And if you were there, let me know. But to me, this crowd sucked last night. This crowd was not getting into things the way that they should have on what I thought was a very good show. It's one thing if the crowd, you know, craps on a show if the show fucking sucks. I didn't think this show sucked. You know, some things were better than others. But I was not impressed by this crowd last night. So then we have the WWE Championship match. We have The Miz, and we have Jerry the King Lawler. And a lot of people speculating whether or not WWE would perhaps put the title on Lawler. Even if it's just for one day, The Miz can come out on Raw the next night and invoke his rematch clause and get the title back. I would not have been opposed to that. Which is to say that if Jerry Lawler had won the WWE title last night, it would have been a great emotional moment. I personally would not have minded it, assuming, of course, that he would have dropped the title right back to The Miz the next night. That, of course, did not end up happening. What happened is, the crowd, again, the crowd was kind of into the match, and as the match built, they got more and more into it. I was happy with the reaction to this match, because it would have been, frankly, embarrassing for Lawler. I thought it was a great story going into this match. You know, the idea that Lawler has never gotten a shot at the championship. He's trying to go to WrestleMania. His mom, in real life, just died. He basically dedicated the match to her without saying as much. How could the crowd not react to this? And they were really getting into it. Alex Riley interfered. They booed the hell out of him. He got kicked out. The crowd went nuts. Now it's down one-on-one. Michael Cole is on commentary being annoying as ever, going nuts and going crazy. And, you know, at one point, Lawler took The Miz on the outside, flung him over the announcer's table right into Michael Cole, who took a bump. Obviously, that got a humongous reaction. In some respects, it reminded me of that pay-per-view after WrestleMania 98, when Vince McMahon was at ringside for the first match between Steve Austin and Dude Love, and they're on the outside, and McMahon is standing there in his suit and tie trying to pick up Dude, and Austin grabs a chair and swings it violently, and he just absolutely just obliterates Vince McMahon with a chair shot to the skull, a chair shot to the face. This was not quite on that same level, don't get me wrong, but there was something about this that reminded me of that moment. And the crowd went nuts. Lawler threw Miz back in the ring, and basically what we saw from there was Miz essentially beat Jerry Lawler clean. You know, Lawler, I was kind of surprised they were teasing the pile driver so much, because even in the build-up to this match, Lawler has never once, if I remember correctly, teased the pile driver, because again, pile drivers, aside from the tombstone, are banned in WWE, and they have been for almost a decade now. Lawler's fist drop has always been built up as his big move. So he was teasing a pile driver in this match. Didn't hit it, of course. And Miz basically beat him clean. You know, there was no hooking the tights. There was no use of a foreign object. Alex Riley had been kicked out. I thought for sure after that bump Michael Cole took when he started coming to his senses that he was going to interfere, perhaps pull the referee out. Didn't happen. Miz beat him clean. And I see a lot of people online who are complaining about that. And, you know, it's one of those funny things where, you know, there's a lot of people out there, myself included, on this very podcast, who have complained about the fact that Miz has not been booked as a strong champion. Miz almost never wins clean. He doesn't win clean enough. But when he does win clean, he should have lost. That's basically what I hear people complaining about. And my message to those people is, quit bitching. This was the right move to make. I would not have minded if Lawler got a one-day title reign. But you know what? I know why they did what they did. Because The Miz has not been booked as great as he should have been as champion. And yes, it's 61-year-old Jerry Lawler. It's not a clean win over a Randy Orton or a John Cena. But nonetheless, it helps him more than it hurts him. You know, for Miz to have lost to Lawler, as much as that would have been great, would have taken some luster off Miz. You know, the point is, Miz has been champion for a few months now, and people are dying to see him get his trap shut. And they're hoping John Cena can do that now at WrestleMania. To have him lose the title now and just get it back a day later, I can see why they didn't go that route. So I actually have no problem with Miz winning clean. It helps The Miz. It makes him look that much stronger. I don't have a problem with that. People need to stop complaining. The core. Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel beat Santino and Kozlov in a whatever. It was just a match. They won the tag team titles. More belts that don't mean anything. I really could care less about all this. We got a segment backstage with John Cena, who was eating a bowl of Fruity Pebbles, which, of course, was a playoff of what The Rock had to say about him on Raw last week in his big promo. And Cena playing it for comedy right now. My gut tells me that when Cena comes out tonight on Raw, and many of you will be listening to this probably after Raw already airs, so you'll know if I was right or wrong, but Cena tweeted a little earlier today. This is the morning after the pay-per-view. He went on Twitter this morning and posted some comments responding to people and whatnot that would lead me to believe we might see a bit of old-school John Cena on Raw tonight. He was talking about how, you know, somebody wrote into him and said, you should go old-school and come out to, you know, as the doctor of Thuganomics. And Cena responded to them and said, you know what, that's a hell of an idea. And then he tweeted again a couple of minutes later and said, just in case he stole a lock and chain from the Elimination Chamber last night, which, of course, Cena, when he was doing the rapper gimmick, would come out with a chain and a lock around his neck. So I don't know if he's going to do that or not, but I'm just saying, keep an eye out. We might see some old-school John Cena tonight. So anyway, we have the Raw Chamber match, which, of course, main events the show, because Raw always main events the show. The opportunity to fight The Miz for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania is on the line, unlike the other Chamber match, which was for a championship. This is for a championship shot. The big theme for this match, to me, which you probably already knew, is that CM Punk is awesome. Everything that Punk did in this match was great. There was no wasted movement. Every mannerism, every funny face he made, every move he executed meant something. It was hilarious to me. You know, when they did the thing where his pod was chosen and the door got stuck and he couldn't get out, and Randy Orton is standing there waiting for him, just seething at the mouth, waiting for him to get out. And Punk is stuck, and Orton starts to beat the crap out of him and pulls him out of the pod and basically eliminates him right away with an RKO. And of course, when that happened, my first instinct was I was disgusted by this. I was like, oh my God, what, are you kidding me? And then, of course, the Raw GM dings in and says that because of a malfunctioning pod, it was unfair that Mr. Punk wasn't able to come out and have his fair shake in this match, and therefore he was reinstating Punk into the chamber. And if you look in the background, you could see Punk scurry, just crawling really quickly back into the pod and calling for the door to be shut and laughing. And I just busted a gut when I saw that. Just fucking hilarious stuff. Punk was great in this match. And as it turned out, Punk did not get eliminated early. He, in fact, was there right up until the very end before being eliminated by John Cena. CM Punk was the star of this match. Actually, you know what? I take that back. John Morrison was the star of this match. CM Punk was close behind, though. John Morrison was very, very impressive here. Obviously, his reputation now that he has is that he does all these fancy moves that nobody else can do. And he did a hell of a job last night. I just worry at what point can't you not top yourself? You know, I don't want the poor guy to get hurt. He's just one with these moves that he does. He's one broken ankle away from disaster. But yeah, John Morrison was the star. Punk had to be number two if he wasn't number one. I think the SmackDown match edges this one out a little bit. No pun intended. Edges them out. But this was still a damn good Raw Chamber match. I do have one nitpick here, and this is about both Chamber matches in general. We kept hearing about this glass, this strongest glass in the world that they were using for these pods, and it just kept breaking. And it happened so many times between both chamber matches that I'm sitting here watching the pay-per-view out loud saying, boy, they got to get new glass in the future. And also, they just overused that spot way too much. You know, in the past, we're used to seeing it usually one time in a chamber match, maybe even one time on a whole pay-per-view with more than one chamber match. You see the spot where somebody gets thrown into the pod and the glass breaks. We must have seen that spot, no joke, on this show 4, 5, 6 times at minimum. That's way, 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 way too much glass breaking on this show. So, yeah, they need to cut back on that because it's an impressive spot. The problem is when you do it multiple times on the same show, it doesn't mean anything anymore. So I thought they went a little overboard on that. But there you go. John Cena ends up getting the win. He gives an attitude adjustment to CM Punk on the steel grate, which looks like it sucked. And John Cena is going to WrestleMania. Now, before the show, I posted on Twitter my picks were Cena, Edge, and Miz. So I was a perfect 3-0 on this show, although anybody really could have figured that out. It was predictable in that respect. And again, I see people on Facebook and I see people online who were bashing the show simply because it was too predictable. And to these people, I say, you guys need a reality check. There are times when WWE is so ungodly predictable that it drives me batshit insane. This was one of those times where even though the outcomes to most of these matches were predictable as shit, it was good that they stuck to their guns and they did it the way that it needed to be done. Because a lot of times if they think people know what the outcome of a match is going to be, they'll change it, they'll swerve it, just for the sake of doing it. And when you're heading into WrestleMania, if you have a set plan where you're going, stick to that plan. If the plan was keep the Miz strong, keep the belt on him until Mania, then you know what? Keep the title on Miz before Mania. If that's what you want to do, if that's the direction you're going, then do it. I have no problem with them being predictable on this particular show. I thought the outcomes were exactly what they needed to be. Would I like to see somebody other than John Cena win an Elimination Chamber? Fuck yeah. I'm not saying I love the fact that John Cena won the Elimination Chamber, but in this particular instance, it made sense. There was nobody else in that match who should have won that battle except for John Cena. And for all the people talking about John Morrison, get over it. John Morrison versus The Miz is not going to headline WrestleMania. It's not going to happen. John Morrison would be well suited to be in the Money in the Bank match if they have one, since they have their own Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I don't know why you would have one at WrestleMania, but apparently, as far as I know, they are going to have one. Put him in there. That's a great showcase for the guy. And if he wins, and I think I posted this either in the latest SE Scoops mailbag. I think it was in the latest mailbag. If you go back to last Friday, I answered a question about this. And I said Morrison should be in the Money in the Bank match. He should show off all of his skills and all of his fancy moves. He'll be the star of the show, win the Money in the Bank briefcase. And instead of being one of these guys who backdoors his way into a championship shot, you know, the champion is all beat up, and so you run down with a referee, and you cash in, and you win the title in 2 minutes. Morrison should be the first guy, and I thought maybe Miz would be this guy, but obviously he wasn't. Morrison should be the first guy, not necessarily to lose when he cashes in, but to cash in and say, listen, I'm cashing in, but I'm cashing in on you with the next pay-per-view. He cashes in advance. He gives the champion advance notice that he's not afraid of him, and he's going to cash in, and he's going to be ready to challenge him for the title on pay-per-view. Not one of these deals where he attacks the guy from behind or lays in wait until the guy is beaten down. I don't think Morrison would really benefit from that. But it would make him seem tougher, I think, than his character has been looked at in the past. Although he's shown a bit of a mean streak recently. Again, Morrison impresses me, but in this match, the right person won. I have no problem with this whatsoever. Sometimes predictable is the way to go. This was an instance where predictability was the way to go. Now, one other thing I noticed here. Actually, two things. Number one, I noticed when the within minutes, by the way, of the pay-per-view going off the air, ring announcer Justin Roberts, who is on Twitter, I think his Twitter handle is announcer Justin, he was tweeting during the pay-per-view. There were tweets from him within 5 or 10 minutes of that show going off the air that were from 15, 20, 25 minutes ago of him tweeting. He tweeted about Morrison. He tweeted about, I think it was after that Doomsday Device spot towards the end of the Chamber match from the old, you know, the old Road Warriors move, and he tweeted, oh, what a rush, which is fine, but you're tweeting while on the job. You're tweeting during the pay-per-view. Now, I personally, I don't give a shit, but I don't know. I mean, you, the way some of these people can be behind the scenes and the stupid shit that people get thrown into the doghouse for, and at the same time, you're tweeting on the job. If it was any other job, I don't think your boss would like to know that you're sitting on Twitter while you're on the clock. And here you are on Twitter with a timestamp that tells people, hey, I'm sitting on my phone during a pay-per-view on live television tweeting. I don't know if that's such a smart thing to be doing. So I just thought that was I just know how fickle these people, you hear these stories about people. I mean, if you just look at somebody the wrong way backstage, or if you post a comment on your Facebook and one person gets wind of it and they're offended by it, you know, you can be de-pushed and just thrown into the doghouse and have the key thrown away for the rest of your life. And I just don't know that it's smart to be doing shit like that. The other thing is, I had a hearty LOL for all the fools who were disappointed that it won't be Rock versus John Cena at WrestleMania. That's right, fools, I say. Some of whom listen to this very podcast. You shouldn't be offended, though, because I've talked about it on the show before. There will be no Rock versus John Cena match at WrestleMania. There will probably never be a Rock versus John Cena match. But at WrestleMania 27, there will not be a Rock versus Cena match. And I'm not saying this because Cena won the Chamber, and so now it's obvious there's not going to be a Rock-Cena match. I said this numerous times before, and nobody listened to me. Actually, most people listened to me, except the fools who were clinging to the hope that it would be Rock versus Cena. And I admit, if you watched that promo The Rock did on Raw last week, under normal wrestling circumstances, you would think that that promo is ultimately going to lead to a match between him and John Cena. However, The Rock has made it very, very clear before. He has wrestled his last match. Now, would I be shocked if, say, 5 years from now, The Rock decides to come out of retirement for one match at a WWE pay-per-view or maybe some sort of benefit at a house show for a friend, and he steps in the ring and wrestles? Who's to say? Never say never in wrestling. But I take The Rock at his word, because over and over and over again for years now, he has said the same thing. He retired quietly at WrestleMania 20 at Madison Square Garden, 2004. That was his last match. He has stuck to his guns now for 7 years. He has not wrestled a match. He hasn't even shown up on live television in 7 years. Now, it would be one thing if The Rock, let's say, was not doing all that well in Hollywood. You know, that's his new career, and if all of a sudden his movies were tanking and he couldn't get work, and, you know, he was in a downward spiral, I would say, you know what? Maybe Rock is desperate enough to want to come back. But The Rock is still in the prime of his movie career as well. Not every movie he does great. That movie Faster that he did last year apparently bombed. But, you know, he's going to be in the new Fast and the Furious movie coming up, which is going to make a gazillion dollars. He's still getting movie roles. He's still making millions of dollars per feature film that he's in. He is a bona fide movie star in Hollywood. And he's got many, many more lucrative years ahead of him. Okay, his career is doing just fine. I take The Rock at his word when he says he's done wrestling. Why would The Rock go on Facebook? The Rock, you'll notice, just opened up a Facebook account and a Twitter account. He opened up a Facebook within the last 2 or 3 weeks. And before he even showed up on Raw, before people even knew for a fact that he was coming back to WWE, he went voluntarily on his new Facebook and had this long entry. And again, I'm sure he gets asked these things all the time, but still, it's not as though he had to say this. He went on his Facebook and chose to type an entry to his fans that explicitly stated he would not be wrestling ever again. Now, he said that we would probably see him back working with Vince McMahon and WWE sooner than we think, which obviously was true, but he has gone out of his way to make it clear he is not wrestling. Why people insist on building these things in their brain only to let themselves down. It's almost like being a masochist, like you want to torture yourself. I've said it before, there would be no Rock Cena match, so I don't understand why people are so upset about this. It's foolish. It is absolutely foolish if you really honestly believed that there was going to be a Rock vs. Cena match at WrestleMania. I'm sure there'll be a face-to-face confrontation, perhaps on Raw, in the next couple of weeks. I don't expect Rock to be on Raw tonight. I mean, maybe he will be, but my guess is if he's going to be on Raw again, it should be no more than one more time before Mania, because again, you don't want The Rock to keep showing up, and then by the time WrestleMania rolls around, people don't want to pay money to see him on pay-per-view. But I'm sure there'll be some Rock Cena interplay. You know, I had one or two people email me with the idea that maybe this is similar to what happened with Steve Austin and Mike Tyson in 1998. Remember when Tyson and Austin had that big shoving match, and then Tyson joined DX, he went heel, and people thought he was going to screw Austin out of the championship, and as it turned out, he was actually a mole in DX. He was never actually with them. Him and Austin were in cahoots the entire time, and they ended the pay-per-view leaving arm in arm. People think perhaps it's going to be the same thing with Rock and John Cena. Maybe. I don't think so, but it's certainly a possibility. I mean, at this point, Rock is not scheduled to officiate that match. I mean, he may be at ringside for it. Maybe he'll be an enforcer, an observer. He'll get involved. Wouldn't shock me if he gave, you know, a Rock Bottom or a People's Elbow to The Miz or Alex Riley or maybe even Michael Cole. And I'm almost positive that when WrestleMania is over, Rock and John Cena will be allied forces. They will be friendly, if not friends. There will be a handshake. There will be, you know, Rock will pick up Cena's arm and officially pass the torch or something. I don't see this in storyline, this bad blood lingering. Are they in cahoots? Maybe. Maybe they're copying off that angle from 98, but why would they? Well, what is the point? See, in 98 it made sense because Tyson was supposed to be the referee. Now, it's kind of funny because even though, you know, Tyson did ultimately count the three in that match with Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin, they basically relegated him to the outside of the ring. So instead of being the actual referee, Mike Tyson turned out to be the enforcer, which is usually how these things work because they usually come to their senses and realize, holy shit, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing in there. And being a referee is a lot more difficult than you would think. You know, referees wear earpieces. They're given very important commands during the match. They have to be in the right position at all times. A lot of these people that they bring in don't know what the hell they're doing, so they end up being on the outside instead of on the inside. But that was different because Tyson was going to be the referee. He was in a position to essentially screw Michaels and help Steve Austin. And Rock is not scheduled to be a referee at this point. He's just hosting the show. So what incentive is there for him to be in cahoots with John Cena? I think it would be better if Cena somehow was to simply earn his respect, and then Rock gives him his props, his stamp of approval at the end of the show, which, by the way, even if that happens, I don't think it's going to make a damn bit of difference with the fans. The fans who boo John Cena are going to continue to boo him regardless of whether or not The Rock starts to be friendly with him. I don't think that's going to matter. But in any event, I just wanted to say that because there are people who are posting who are very upset. They're blaming WWE. Oh, my God. How could they go with Cena vs. Miz and not Cena vs. Rock? Did the thought ever occur to you people that it's not up to WWE? Do you not think that if Rock... I mean, do you honestly believe that WWE would not love to do a John Cena-Rock match at WrestleMania? Of course they would. The match has money printed all over it. They could print money with that match. The Rock does not want to wrestle. It's not WWE's fault. Blame The Rock. I don't, but if you want to, if you want to blame somebody, don't blame Vince McMahon. There's plenty of shit that we can blame him for. Blame The Rock. Or blame yourself for being too foolish to realize that this match was never going to happen to begin with. All right, I want to give some quick thoughts on Raw from last week, which is basically old news by now, and most people probably don't remember much from last week's show except for The Rock's return. But we did get a damn good match with The Miz and Daniel Bryan last week, which I thought was just great stuff. And even though Bryan lost, he looked pretty damn good in defeat. So it's too bad Miz couldn't have more matches like that thus far. I think if he would have been in the ring with people like Daniel Bryan instead of Randy Orton every friggin' week, he would have been better off for it. We got the final 2:21:11 video, which this time basically all but showed The Undertaker. There were people who seemed to be of the impression that there were two people in the video. There was The Undertaker in the cabin, and then at the end of the video, we see this figure standing outside in the rain with a long trench coat. That's not how I interpreted that, by the way. I interpreted that as they show The Undertaker in the cabin, and the next scene is Undertaker outside of the cabin, leaving the cabin, seemingly to head to Raw, which is in Fresno tonight. Some people think, oh, there were two people in the video. The other person must be Sting. Oh my God, Sting is coming back. Look, WWE and Sting were each very much aware of the attention that was generated by that initial video. And as of a week ago, based on what I've read, there was still no communication between the two sides. But that doesn't mean Sting won't come to WWE. I will give you that. I'm not saying Sting is not coming in. What I'm saying is it was not Sting in that video. That's what I'm saying. And again, it's kind of like the stuff with The Rock. Don't get your hopes up. I always subscribe to the theory that if I keep my expectations low, I can never be disappointed. But if I always set my expectations uber high, I'm bound to be pissed off all the time. And there's a lot of pissed off wrestling fans online right now. And on if my Facebook and Twitter alone are any indication, those people need to calm down a little bit here. I fear that their blood pressure may be abnormally high. And when it comes to professional wrestling, it's not worth it to let that happen. When The Rock came out, I couldn't help but think, Sting who? It seemed like all the discussion of Sting for all those weeks just completely was flushed down the toilet when The Rock came back. Again, everybody went crazy. He had this phenomenal promo. It's amazing to me that The Rock, you know, for a guy that's been gone for 7 years, and aside from that one sort of promo that he cut at the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago when he inducted his dad and his grandfather, and it was really funny stuff. You know, he ragged on Steve Austin, on Chris Jericho, on Mick Foley, on Jonathan Coachman, on Santino, if you remember, it was at the 2008 Hall of Fame. Aside from that, here's a guy that has not done this in 7 years, but it just comes so naturally to him. He just slips right back into the Rock character and doesn't miss a beat at all. And the crowd just eats it up. I've never seen a guy, Steve Austin, even Hulk Hogan, to be honest with you, I've never seen a guy who can control a crowd like The Rock. Some people have that gift. Actually, most people don't. But some people have it, some people don't. The Rock has it. I mean, we already knew that. But it's been so long since we've seen something like that on Raw. It was so nice. It was so fun. It was so refreshing. And like a lot of you, I actually appreciated the salty language that we heard on Raw. It was kind of funny because the first mention of the word ass, they bleeped. This was on the USA Network feed here in the States, and they bleeped it. And then after that, they bleeped the next word that he used, but they missed it. Which, they did a lot of that, I want you to know, 10 years ago, when The Rock would come out, or Chris Jericho would come out, or Steve Austin would come out. Let's say Steve Austin would come out on Raw, and he was doing a back-and-forth promo with Vince McMahon. The crowd was, you know, chanting asshole at Vince, and then Steve would go, well, you know, right now you got 15,000 people calling you an asshole. And usually USA Network would either not bleep it, or, for whatever reason, Steve Austin would say the word asshole, and then they would bleep. So it was like, is somebody sleeping at the switch? And that's kind of what happened on Monday. The first thing they bleeped, the second thing they bleeped it too late, and then after that they just gave up. They threw their hands in the air and said, "Fuck this. We're not even going to bother bleeping this guy anymore." So we got an ass mention, we got a some bitch mention, all good stuff. It was very refreshing because what separated this promo from every other friggin' promo we ever see on Raw is that at no point during The Rock's promo did it sound or feel like he was reciting something that was written for him. I mean, I don't know if that struck you as much as it struck me. You can just sense from a promo. Either that or Rock is just so ungodly good at delivering his lines. But you can just... And there were stories when Rock was still wrestling, just like Steve Austin. They would get handed a piece of paper by Vince Russo or Brian Gewirtz or one of the writers. And they would either... In Rock's case, he would openly laugh and just throw the paper away. Or Steve Austin was notorious for just crumpling the paper into a ball and throwing it in the trash can. Because these guys knew what they had to go out there and do. And that's what it sounded like on Monday Night. Rock did not go out there with a script. He did not go out there with bad comedy. He went out there and did what he always does, and the crowd ate it up. And when you watch the John Cena promo at the beginning of Raw and compare it to the Rock promo at the very end of the show, it illustrated to me how absolutely dreadful promos have fallen in wrestling because of the scripting. There's no doubt in my mind it's because of the over-scripting of stuff. And the unfortunate part about it is a lot of these guys that are coming up from FCW now, the young guys that they're trying to push, if Vince McMahon, God forbid, were to croak tomorrow and somebody with a clue took over when it comes to this promo stuff, because that's the one thing I think Vince has absolutely failed at. In recent years as a booker, as a promoter, as the head of the company, he doesn't realize how much damage that he's doing in that department. And the problem is that if Vince died tomorrow and there was a change in policy and you had Sheamus and John Morrison and all these guys come out and they weren't being given word-for-word scripts on what to say, a lot of them would probably still cut some pretty fucking awful promos because they don't know, they weren't taught in developmental how to cut a promo on your own. At least, I mean, I've read interviews and stuff that they teach people down there. And it's just because it's not the way that things are done now. They're not being taught how to ad lib. They're not being taught how to go out there and do a promo without having the benefit of a script. So even if that changed overnight, a lot of these guys still wouldn't be, they'd be no better than they are now. You know, it's a process that would take many, many months, if not years, to correct. And The Rock, the one problem, besides the fact that he's not going to wrestle, the one problem with The Rock being out there and cutting that awesome promo and being back in the fold is it makes everybody else look so inferior compared to him, at least on the microphone. It just makes everybody else look so bad. And it's not their fault. It's WWE's fault. It's not The Rock's fault. It's not even John Cena's fault. That's the one negative. You know, if Rock showed up last week and he's not going to be on the show tonight, and he's not going to be on the show every week, everything else is just five steps down from the end of that show last Monday night. One other quick note here from Raw. I'm not going to rant about it like I did a couple of weeks ago because there's no point. Like I said, you got to just stop letting stupid wrestling bullshit get to you, but Natalya got buried just 6 feet under again on Raw. Michael Cole made mention of a WWE.com poll about, you know, the fans were asked, of all the WWE divas, which one would you most like to spend Valentine's with? And apparently Natalya won, and she won by a pretty large margin, something like 60-something percent. Now, even I admit, if I were asked the same question, I think Natalya is a pretty girl, but I'm not sure she would have been my pick. But nonetheless, you have your two announcers here, one of whom is a heel in Michael Cole, and Josh Matthews, by default, would be a babyface. And yet, Michael Cole is going on and on about he can't understand the result of that poll, you know, basically saying, why would anybody pick Natalya? And Josh Matthews actually agreed with him. He actually agreed with Michael Cole. Apparently, something happened. Something did happen with, I think, the entire Hart dynasty, because if you'll notice, all three guys, David Hart Smith, Tyson Kidd, and now Natalya with these verbal burials on commentary, they have just been treated like dog shit over the last couple of months. I mean, the Hart dynasty got blown up. Neither guy, you know, they put Tyson with the bodyguard. The bodyguard, they realized Jackson Andrews wasn't ready. They sent him back down to developmental. Tyson Kidd got beat up by Hornswoggle at the Royal Rumble. There can be no greater insult than that. And apparently with Natalya specifically, something happened backstage a little while ago. I don't know what it is. I don't know if there was an incident. I don't know if, again, it's what I was talking about earlier. Maybe it was something stupid and insignificant, and it got her heat with the wrong person. I don't know. But apparently there is a reason that she is being buried like this, which, again, I don't know what it was, but it still doesn't sit well with me, but at least there's a reason for it, and they're not, I know I'm reaching for an excuse here, but at least there's a reason for it, and they're not just burying her, you know, for the sake of burying her. Jim Ross, after Raw Monday night, I take issue with something that JR said on his Twitter. I like Jim Ross. I don't always agree with what he says, and this is one instance where I have a problem with something he said, and I want to talk about it here. When Raw went off the air, obviously JR was very, very complimentary about The Rock's promo, as everybody was. I have not heard a bad word said about The Rock's promo. It was great stuff. And Jim Ross concurred, and he went on Twitter and he made this comment. He said, and I quote, "Dwayne Johnson's classic Rock promo tonight on Raw was the best thing on Raw in recent memory. Young wrestlers hopefully paid attention," end quote. That's all well and good, but here's the thing that Jim Ross, and Jim Ross is a smart guy. He knows this, but for whatever reason he made this comment. The Rock can go out there and get away with saying the things that he said. And I'm not even talking about the curse words and all that. The Rock is in a league of his own. He is a legend. He is a guy who is a special attraction now and is not an everyday wrestler. He was with the company at a time when things were done differently. That is how he learned how to cut promos. That and his innate ability and charisma have contributed to his promo style, okay? But the fact is, The Rock is a big enough star, and he's being brought in now, not even as a wrestler. He truly is a celebrity all unto himself that they are bringing in to help promote WrestleMania. The Rock can get away with going out there, just like somebody like Steve Austin can get away with going out there and saying certain things and cutting a promo without a script, if they want to, that nobody else can get away with. Dolph Ziggler cannot go out there and do what The Rock did. Now, Dolph can't do what The Rock did because he's not as good as The Rock is on promos. But what I mean by that is Dolph does not have the power. He does not have the ability to go out there and say what he wants to say and get handed a script backstage and laugh at the guy and say, "Fuck this, I'm not reading this word for word. I'll do the bullet points, I'll hit on all the points you want me to talk about. I'm going to go out there and do this promo the way that I want to do it." You know what would happen to Dolph Ziggler if he did that? Dolph Ziggler would be no more. And you can say that about Drew McIntyre. You can say that about Daniel Bryan. Even The Miz. These are guys who are working within the system now. And these are guys that know they are expendable. The Rock is not expendable. They need The Rock more than The Rock needs them right now. That's why he's here. They didn't get Brock Lesnar. They didn't get a big celebrity. They need The Rock. The Rock is WrestleMania this year. So he can get away with a lot more than a Dolph Ziggler or a Daniel Bryan or a Drew McIntyre could. And I think it's unfair for Jim Ross to make comments like that. Yes, I agree that young wrestlers can learn a lot from The Rock. You know, maybe if The Rock is going to be back on a semi-regular basis, maybe The Rock can give people advice backstage, and he can work on promos with some of these young guys. Maybe they'll bring The Rock in as a guest trainer on Tough Enough one week. I think that would be a fine idea. But to go online, and he made multiple comments like this, even in his online blog, JR did, that, well, you know, young wrestlers hopefully were taking notes and paying attention because blah, 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 blah. I don't understand what he means by that. You know, if he's talking, you can't teach charisma to somebody. That's number one. And number two, if what he's talking about is the way that you cut a promo, there's no way The Rock went out there with a piece of paper telling him what to do. So what is a young wrestler supposed to gain from reading that comment? What does he mean by that? Hopefully they paid attention. Well, yeah, I hope they paid attention. Maybe they picked up on something that they could learn or use in one of their own promos. But they don't have the power to do what The Rock did. If they do, they're going to be buried or they're going to be fired. You can't expect them to do that. And if they're too afraid to do that, I don't blame them. Now, John Cena is the one guy who, and look, I'm not backstage. Let me preface this by saying that. I do this podcast. I'm not backstage in WWE. I don't know everything that goes on back there. I have to think, for as long as Cena has been with this company now, he is to the WWE in 2011 what Steve Austin once was to the company. what The Rock once was, what Hulk Hogan once was, and that he is the chosen one. He is their big star. He is the spokesperson. He is the guy that sells the most merchandise. He is the face of World Wrestling Entertainment. He has been with the company a long time. He's their top moneymaker, okay? And John Cena, much like The Rock, has a charisma that he was born with. He has this innate ability to go out there and cut a great promo when he is given the opportunity to do so. He did it earlier in his career. He doesn't do it so much now because the material he's given sucks. So what is stopping John Cena from exercising some of that authority? If there's one guy on the roster who could probably get away with it, it's John Cena, and yet he just apparently insists on going with the flow and using this horrible material and cutting these corny, god-awful promos every week. So I do blame John Cena for that. But again, for Jim Ross to go on Twitter and say, well, The Rock was great on Monday, and I hope the young guys were paying attention. Yeah, I hope they were paying attention, but at the same time, I have no fucking clue what Jim Ross expects these poor guys to do. And of all the people to know this, it would be Jim Ross, who worked in talent relations for numerous years and worked with Vince McMahon and worked backstage, and he knows what goes on backstage more than any of us do. For him to make that comment, I thought, would be taken the wrong way, and it was a stupid comment to make because, again, if I'm a young wrestler, I look at that and I'm like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? What does he expect me to do? So, anyway, I just thought that was an odd comment for him to make. SmackDown celebrated 600 episodes this past Friday night. Dolph Ziggler is officially being recognized as a former World Heavyweight Champion. So for all the times I sung the praises of Dolph Ziggler on this podcast and I said there were big things in his future, I didn't expect him to become a World Heavyweight Champion this quickly, but technically he has now been a World Heavyweight Champion. So I guess congratulations, although the poor bastard got fired. I'm not sure how they're going to reintroduce him now. Some of you guys have written into me speculating that perhaps when he comes back, he'll come back and maybe he'll cut this promo saying that, you know, he only took the name Dolph Ziggler because whatever his explanation is, and maybe he'll come back with his real name or using a new name, which of course is what I asked you guys on this podcast last week on episode 146. I asked you guys to submit your own names, perhaps, that Dolph Ziggler should use in place of Dolph Ziggler, which is a terrible fucking name. By far, the most reaction I got from you guys was that he should use his real name of Nick Nemeth, which I think would be a fine idea. You know, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about that when I said that last week, but it probably would make the most sense. We know why WWE won't do it. They don't want guys using their real names because if they use their real names, you've got a Kurt Angle, you've got a Jeff Hardy who can go somewhere else and make money for somebody else and use their same name and likeness, and they don't want that. Those days, for the most part, are probably over. They want as much control over your character and your name as humanly possible. So if not Nick Nemeth, then what? So I just want to run through some of the names here. And I know a lot of you, some of you submitted them via Facebook and stuff. I asked you guys to email me for a reason because it's just a lot more organized that way. I could just kind of go through my inbox. So if you sent me a name on Facebook, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to mention it here because I can't just go back and forth like this. Let's see, this one, Alvin said, everyone used to pick on him. Who are you? And he seems to be the reject. So Butters from South Park suits him amazingly well. Oh, there's a fine idea right there. All right, Alex from Tijuana, Mexico writes in. First name that pops into his head was Blondie Smugface. I think we can do better than that, Alex. Mark here says, how about Zach Nixon? Or perhaps his real name, Nick Nemeth. Well, there's only room for one Zach. In WWE, of course, that's Zack Ryder. I don't think they're going to have more than one. K-Fist has an interesting suggestion here for Dolph's new name. How about Matt Gibson? What do you think? Does it have a nice ring to it? I think that has a nice ring to it. It reminds me too much of James Gibson, though. Jamie Noble. So I don't know that I would go with that name, but I don't see there being a problem with it. And lastly here, our good buddy David, who I ribbed a couple of weeks ago for the whole Plan B thing, if you remember from the mailbag. He thought Plan B would make for a fine name for Dolph Ziggler, and you know what? I don't think that would be such a bad idea. If his whole gimmick is that he's a ladies' man, if you think about it, Plan B actually would kind of make sense. So, anyway, the overwhelming winner of our little contest here is Nick Nemeth. Everybody, not everybody, but most of the people who wrote in seem to think that his real name would suit him just fine. So, even though they'll never do it, I think that I would agree. Nick Nemeth is, there's nothing wrong with that name. One more thing here regarding Tough Enough before I get to some of the real mailbag questions this week. Tough Enough began filming in California this past week, I believe in Simi Valley. And it was interesting to note that I read that most of the production for the show, which I was not aware of, is being handled by a company called Shed Media. It is not, in fact, being handled by WWE's production team. Now, I know I've talked on the show before about WWE, as great and as talented as their production team is, there is this inability on their part to produce television that is not like WWE television. So the way they produce TV is the only way they know how. So, like, if you go back and watch the original incarnation of Tough Enough on MTV, that was the MTV folks handling that. And I thought that show was shot like a real reality show. It was just, it was shot really well. There's a difference. If you, to the visual eye, there's a difference when you watch a show like that or a WWE-produced show. And I thought that this show should be more like the original Tough Enough. So I don't know that Shed Media was the company that did the original show, but the fact that they are handling this and not WWE, I think, is a great thing. I mean, my hopes for this show, when I read that alone, shot through the roof. And maybe it's not as big of a deal to you guys, but to me, that means a lot. The fact that WWE is taking a hands-off approach and letting this company produce the show, I think that's a great thing. They're doing everything in their power, WWE is, to make this show a success. So, at the end of the day, you know, Tough Enough premieres on April 4th after Raw, the night after WrestleMania. It's been given a 10-week run. Like I said, it just went into production this past week. Steve Austin has been tweeting about it. He is the host slash trainer, head trainer on the show. And, you know, they're doing everything in their power to make this show must-see television. They brought Stone Cold Steve Austin into host. They've got Booker T. They're bringing Trish Stratus back, we just found out. They may have one more big-name host that they announce. They announced, they put a press release out this week, which is a little bit of a joke, but Miss USA is being brought in as one of the contestants on the show. Miss USA, by the way, is a legitimate diehard WWE fan. I think she was in the crowd at WrestleMania this past year, and she actually guest-hosted Raw a couple of months back. So at least the girl is a legit fan. She's not just a pretty face they're bringing in because she happens to be Miss USA. But obviously that's the real reason they're bringing her in. The point is, there's a lot of star power on this show. And USA Network is looking to get into the reality show business. You know, USA Network is one of the, if not the top cable channel in this country. Usually they're in hot competition with TNT and ESPN. And USA is one of the few popular basic cable channels to not get into the reality TV business. And so they're looking to enter that realm. And they're looking at WWE and their Tough Enough show as their first foot in the door. They want this show to be a success. We also have found out that Tough Enough, again, that first night is airing after Raw, the night after WrestleMania. Every week after that, it's actually going to be airing before Raw and after Raw, which is good. You know, the more the merrier, because I think, you know, I had been complaining about that. The fact that if the show was only going to air before Raw, I myself would not always be able to watch it, and I don't have DVR at this point. It would make me very sad if I had to miss any of Tough Enough. The fact that they're going to show it before and after Raw, I think, is a good thing, except for one little teensy-weensy thing I just thought about. If, let's just say, hypothetically, you and I were going to, we're going to watch Tough Enough after Raw at 11:05 every week. We either can't or don't want to watch it before Raw. That's all well and good. The problem is that Tough Enough airs on the same channel. And so if you put Raw on at the very beginning, you're probably going to catch the very end of Tough Enough, which will spoil the end for you. That sucks. That's the only thing I realized about this that sucks. So I'm going to have to figure out a way to either come into Raw late or somehow just, I don't know, try to avoid that last 60 seconds of the show, I guess. But nonetheless, they're really beefing this thing up, and I for one am very much looking forward to the show. I did think it was interesting, though. You know, they have Miss USA as one of the diva contestants, the diva hopefuls on the show, and it came out this past week that Austin Aries, who you may have known if you're a TNA fan, he was in TNA way back when as Austin Starr. Austin Aries, of course, on the independent circuit in Ring of Honor, is a very big name. Former Ring of Honor champion, and Austin Aries tried out for Tough Enough, and he got rejected. He was not accepted for the show, and so he's been posting tweets of later. He posted a tweet that alluded to the fact that perhaps he may be facing the end of his career. It may be time for Austin Aries to move on to something else. Apparently, he's not big enough, strong enough, or tough enough, he says. So he's not taking that all that well. And you know what? I can understand the frustration on his part. Here's a talented guy who, he's a small guy, so he's had to really fight for opportunities in his career. And he's never been in WWE. He has been in TNA. And here they are putting out press releases announcing that Miss USA is on the show, but they reject him. So I can understand his frustration in that respect. On the other hand, Austin Aries has been somebody who has been said to have quite a chip on his shoulder and not be the nicest guy in the world and have a little bit of an inflated ego about him. So it may be a little harder for him to get over something like this. I think it would have been nice to have one or two really like known independent guys. And maybe, you know, nobody knows who was on the show yet. Everybody involved has been forced to sign very strict confidentiality agreements. It is entirely possible that there are one or two indie stars that I would recognize, or perhaps a name that you would recognize, who were accepted and who are going to be on Tough Enough. Because the big difference between Tough Enough now and Tough Enough then is, back then, it was all unknowns. It was a bunch of young people who wanted to be a wrestler, and they decided this was going to be their foot in the door. This time, WWE supposedly changed that policy and went out of their way to bring in people who have some level of experience, which you would imagine, in some cases, would include people who wrestle independently. We just don't know who those people are. I'm sure things will leak out, but yeah, I guess we'll find out. But tough break for Austin Aries on that front. And the last quick note here, for those of you who may have missed it, I did see the segment on Tosh.0, which I think airs on the G4 network. Anyway, he did this segment, Tosh did, on his show called Web Redemption, where he dressed himself up as the Ultimate Warrior and did a sit-down interview with the fan who is best known for being caught crying. This was at I think it was some sort of Starcade reunion Q&A type event in a gymnasium somewhere. This was a couple of years ago. And Jim Cornette was there, and Terry Funk was part of the panel. And they went to this guy. His name is Dave, I think. And he was asking them, he was basically heaping praise on the wrestlers for all they put their bodies through and everything. And he started crying. And people are looking at him, and they're laughing at him. And, you know, and then he just blurts out, he goes, "It's still real to me, damn it." And he became known as the "It's Still Real to Me" fan. And you could easily find it if you go on YouTube. It's actually quite hilarious. So Tosh sat down with him to conduct the sit-down interview. And he did. He brought up that incident, and he brought up him being a wrestling fan. Anyway, the point of all this segment, much to my amazement, included several WWE Hall of Famers. Coco Beware is in the segment. The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, is in the segment. And in fact, DiBiase and Coco Beware get into a fight. They get into a match during the segment. Sergeant Slaughter makes an appearance. I was watching this going, holy shit, I had no idea the Million Dollar Man was going to be wrestling in this segment, but there he was. So I don't know if it's it might be on YouTube, it might be on the again, I don't know, I think it's G4, whatever the network was. Maybe they put up a clip of it on their website. Do a search. You know, you're all smart guys. You could do a Google search and find it on your own. I would watch it. It was actually very entertaining. And yeah, a lot of WWE Hall of Fame talent in that segment. So good stuff. All right, let's bust into the mailbag here. First thing, I want to get to a letter that contains a belated birthday shout-out. This goes out to, hope I'm pronouncing this right, Cahill Omiokan, who writes into the show. First time writing in. He's been a listener to the Sound Off for a while, sporadically since the mid-80 episodes, habitually since episode 105. I guess that's when his addiction began. His question is, what was the best live wrestling show I've ever attended? For him, it was WrestleMania 24. Apparently, he traveled over 4,000 miles from Dublin, Ireland to Orlando for the show, but it was worth every inch, according to him. You know, I've been to a lot of good wrestling shows. I haven't been to a WrestleMania. I hope that changes in the very near future. I have to say that I really enjoyed the 2008 Royal Rumble. I had never been to a Royal Rumble before. The energy, the countdowns for every entrant, you know, the fact that that Rumble started with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker in Madison Square Garden. You had Rowdy Roddy Piper, who made a surprise appearance, as did Jimmy Snuka, and they went at it. And then John Cena, if you may recall, his big surprise at the end that was a legitimate surprise, and the place just exploded for it. It was also the night that Ric Flair beat MVP in what turned out to be Flair's final Madison Square Garden match ever. At least I hope it stays that way. So it was a noteworthy show in that respect. I had a lot of fun that night. So I put the 08 Royal Rumble way up there. But I also enjoyed my very first live Raw show, which was back in July of 1998. It was a live Raw in New Jersey at the Continental Airlines Arena, the Meadowlands, which it'll always be called the Meadowlands. And I remember we were the first people to get to the luxury box. I had won these tickets from a radio station, which I did 7 times back in the day, by the way. And to show you how far wrestling popularity has fallen, that particular radio station, I don't even think they give away wrestling tickets anymore. At the time they did, that was the first time I won. Four luxury box seats. We were the first ones in the box, so we got front row of the luxury box. We opened the big glass window, and it was one of these luxury boxes that wasn't all the way up. It was kind of in the middle, so our view was still pretty good from where we were. I am a fan of being in the crowd. There was something about it I didn't like in that I, you know, especially when the crowd goes crazy and erupts, I like to be in the middle of all that chaos and pandemonium. And so being in a box, so to speak, took a little bit of that away. But it was still an amazing experience. And I'll never forget, you know, the show went to air that night. And the first thing I noticed was they were putting pyro things, traps, whatever you want to call them, in the ring. And this is how sick wrestling fans can be. I mean, wrestling fans will hear a specific chord at the beginning of someone's entrance music, and they'll just erupt. They know right away who it is. In this case, I saw the pyro they were putting in the ring, and I knew who the pyro was for. And I said, that looks like Shawn Michaels' pyro. And this was in July of 98, mind you, so we had not seen Shawn Michaels at all since losing to Steve Austin at WrestleMania. He had not yet had his back surgery. A lot of people forget about that. Shawn Michaels didn't have back surgery until the following year. He tried to rehab it at first, and when rehab didn't work, then he had the surgery. But he had been off TV since March. And sure enough, Raw goes on the air, and we hear Sexy Boy, and out comes Shawn Michaels. And the place went nuts. I went nuts. Everybody went nuts. I think Kane and Mankind beat the New Age Outlaws also that night for the tag team title. So that was a fun show, too. And what's even more memorable about that is part of the package, so to speak, for what I won was that four WWE wrestlers would come into the luxury box to sign materials and take pictures for a good 15 minutes. And the people we got were Luna Vachon, who has since passed away, the world's strongest man, Mark Henry, Owen Hart, who has also passed on, and Mankind, who looked absolutely just beat up. I mean, this was only a couple of weeks after that Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker, and he looked like hell warmed over. He was wearing his Mankind attire without the mask, and him and Owen were basically sitting there, or standing there, talking to each other, having a normal conversation, really paying us no attention. I mean, they're signing shit for us, but they're talking about, you know, I got to pick my kid up from school, and just normal stuff, which I found incredibly, you know, I mean, I was intrigued by the whole thing. I didn't mind that they really weren't paying any attention to us. When it came time for them to leave the luxury box, Owen was the one, he was the last one out, and before he left the box, he stopped himself and turned around and went out of his way to ask if anybody else wanted any pictures taken. I mean, he took the time, and again, they're going from luxury box to luxury box. Raw's going on the air in half an hour. He didn't have to do this, but Owen stopped himself, turned around, asked if anybody wanted pictures. Nobody, and here's the thing, everybody was so intimidated. Nobody was speaking up. You could tell people, of course, they wanted more pictures, but nobody said a word. And he's still standing there. And finally, I had the courage to go, yeah, I'd like one. And he's like, sure, no problem. So he came over, took pictures with me and my buddy. And I'll never forget that. That was, you know, that was really, it's hard to top that, especially, you know, when you consider less than a year later, the guy was dead. So, you know, as far as an event, the 2008 Royal Rumble at MSG was a lot of fun, but I'll never, for as long as I live, I'll never forget that first experience at Raw in Jersey, meeting Owen Hart, Shawn Michaels coming back, my first real, you know, TV taping. It's just a lot of fun. Anyway, the other reason I picked this letter here is because Call Hall is celebrating a birthday. It's a little belated now. His birthday was this past Saturday, the 19th. So I know it's a little late, but happy birthday, buddy. I hope hope you got everything you wanted. And if you did tune into the Elimination Chamber, you got a hell of a show. So hope it was a good birthday. All right. We have Paul Kellerman who writes in. We know WWE is a publicly traded company, so my question is, how difficult would it be to make it a private company once again? It would be pretty difficult. I think, I don't know the exact numbers. I think Vince McMahon owns 60% of the company now, which is down from what it used to be. I know it used to be 80, now it's 60. Basically, they'd have to buy back, they'd have to buy up all the shares that are owned by everybody else, which is, again, it's not an easy thing to do. It's possible. It's not that it's not doable, but it would be very difficult for them to do that. It's kind of like a Pandora's box in that once you open it up, it's very difficult to kind of close it. It's difficult to put the genie back in the bottle, and I don't see that ever happening. Chris writes into the podcast, at least I think it's Chris, one of our regular listeners. He didn't put his real name in your email. You got to do that, people. You got to put your name in the email if you want it read on the air. His question is, what do I think was Triple H's biggest return pop? Of course, he had two big returns coming up, quad injuries. Which one do I think was the biggest? By far. I mean, there's just no comparison. By far, it was his Madison Square Garden return in 2002. You had Jim Ross on commentary who, you know, Jim Ross could certainly embellish every now and then. I don't think he was embellishing all that much when he made that comment on commentary that, it was a reaction the likes of which he had never heard in Madison Square Garden before. And I was not there that night, but the place went nuts when Triple H came back from that first quad tear, and he came back as a babyface. He was jacked to the gills, was Triple H. I would expect that when Triple H returns, which could happen as early as tonight on Raw, to set up a potential program with The Undertaker for WrestleMania this year. But whenever Triple H comes back, I'm sure he'll be in great shape. I do not expect to see him quite as jacked as he was back then, to the point where he could barely move. But there's no comparison. By far, it was that Raw return back in 2002. Ron writes in, Dear Solomonster, I just got done listening to Sound Off 146, and I am going to Raw on March 22nd in Pittsburgh, 2 weeks before WrestleMania, and I will bring a sign that says Solomonster. And if they try to take it away from me, I will bring a magic marker and make one while I am there. What do you want it to say? I've been listening since around episode 80, and I love it. I think Solomonster is just fine. Maybe Solomonster sounds off. You know, be creative with it if you want to, but let me know what happens. I'll let you know if I see you on TV, and if you get beaten down by security, well, I apologize in advance. Simon from India writes in, loves the Sound Off, has a question. He wants me to tell him which is the worst case scenario among the following. Number one, watching John Cena cut a promo, which actually, by the way, it says watching John Cena cut a porno. Oh my God. Number two, missing a Solomonster episode. Or number three, watching Raw with white ring ropes and the fucking HD Titantron screen. Well, by far, number one would be the worst. John Cena is a good-looking guy, don't get me wrong, but watching John Cena cut a porno is not my idea of fun. So apparently Simon disagrees, though. He says that these HD things are the reason why WWE is not like it was before, because psychology is what makes the matches very slow. I have no idea what he's talking about. HD has nothing to do with WWE not being the way it was before. Believe you me, it has absolutely zero to do, in fact, with the way WWE is these days. But to each their own, I guess. We found somebody who dislikes HD. He is a big fan of standard definition. There you go. This question comes from Liam. I recall when The Undertaker and Kane were feuding once more, and they were teasing another Undertaker return. On one particular episode of SmackDown, I saw a lightning bolt hit the stage, followed by an explosion. Was this real, or was this edited in later on? I ask because surely it's almost impossible to fire an accurate lightning bolt. I swear to God this is a real question. Because of the metal ring post, the metal lighting rack, and the metal that the fans would be wearing. No, it was not a real lightning bolt. I'm not even sure that you can accurately fire any real lightning bolt. I think it's one of those acts of God, it's acts of nature that you have no control over. It was either edited in later on, or it was some other type of pyro explosion in the arena, and they kind of put the lightning effect over it on TV. I assure you that it was not a real lightning bolt. Oh, boy. Luis from Illinois writes in, now that the Hall of Fame will not be televised, do you think Vince McMahon will loosen the leash and allow his inductees to speak as long as they want now that they don't have any time restraints? It is true that WWE is not going to be airing the Hall of Fame on TV on Saturday night this year, which I think is a fucking fantastic move. And I think I might have ranted about this last year on the Sound Off, because it got to the point of just absolute ridiculousness, where you had people going into the Hall of Fame that were supposed to talk about, you know, a 20 or 30 year career, and they were being given 5 minutes, if that. And there's actually a countdown clock they had up in the arena that people could see counting them down. And they would sound a siren if you went overtime. Just absolute bullshit. And you know what? Just because they're not airing the Hall of Fame on Saturday, I don't know that that means they won't put time constraints on people. But even if they do, you got to expect that it's going to be more than 5 minutes. So they're airing the Hall of Fame, I think, on Monday night this year, either before or after Raw, I think, as opposed to Saturday, which is a great move. And it will give people more time. Absolutely. Whether it's... even if it was just 5 more minutes, you know what? That's 5 minutes more than they would otherwise have. So I think that's a fantastic move. Thumbs up, and it's something they should have done a long time ago. The other part of Luis's question here, now that WrestleMania 28 has officially been named as taking place in Miami, should WWE just lock in The Rock in terms of securing a time commitment to main event next year's Hall of Fame? Well, who's to say it hasn't already been discussed? You know, it may already be an initial agreement in place for him to go into the Hall of Fame next year. Although, again, he's still making movies, and there's no telling what his schedule will be like. It really comes down to The Rock's schedule. It's not that The Rock doesn't want to go into the Hall of Fame. He will go into the Hall of Fame. He knows he's going to go into the Hall of Fame. It's a matter of what is the best time to do it. The fact that it's in Miami, where he played football, and I think he grew up, to me, nothing is a lock. Nothing is ever a lock. But to me, it would make sense to put him in the Hall of Fame then. But you know what? Then again, when WrestleMania was in Chicago back in 06, they were going to put the Road Warriors in, and the only reason they didn't was because Animal insisted that his career wasn't over. And that was when he got that last run with Heidenreich as the new LOD, which of course went nowhere. And that's why the Road Warriors are still not in the Hall of Fame. They'll go in eventually. But in this case, The Rock, I'm pretty secure in my saying that The Rock won't wrestle a match. And if they could work it into his schedule, I think he'll absolutely be main eventing the Hall of Fame next year, as he should. This letter comes from Sean from Switzerland via Ireland. Dear Mr. Monster, he says, I have just been thinking recently about TNA pay-per-views, and I'm just realizing that whoever is naming these events must be a huge Phil Collins fan. Think about it. TNA Against All Odds, TNA Genesis, and TNA Sacrifice. What's next? TNA Easy Lover? Let's go Velvet Sky. Perhaps the most appropriate name for one of their events could be TNA Land of Confusion. Plus one for you, my friend. That's awesome. I know you probably get a lot of this, but keep up the great work. It's a great show. I've been listening to everyone since the 40th episode. It's my first time mailing in. I had the chance only recently to listen to your Michael Jackson rant. That would be the infamous episode 75, which I have posted before as a vintage sound-off. Anyway, just fantastic stuff, he says. Had me in stitches laughing. Have a great week. Well, thank you for the letter. You know, I didn't realize the Phil Collins tie in there, but you might be right, actually. And I think Land of Confusion should be the name of the promotion. They should just rename TNA Land of Confusion, because that's all that they are. Ryan wants to know. He's listening to the Sound Off when I broke down WWE's Top 50 Superstars DVD. That was when they officially released the 50 names. He wants to know if I've since watched the DVD. I have not. He says that on the DVD, they say it's the superstars who are making the picks, which could explain some of the controversial choices. Do you buy that explanation, and does it change your impression of the list? They say that the superstars made the picks. If they did, that's news to the superstars. Because I remember when that DVD came out, I believe it was even in the Observer newsletter, they made mention of the fact that it's complete bullshit that the superstars made picks. They may have submitted picks, But if they did, WWE just ended up going with their own list. There's no possible way, because even when that DVD came out, a lot of the wrestlers apparently backstage, and even there are wrestlers that have gone public. Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, who granted are not backstage these days. Even they said the list was complete bullshit. I think Steve Austin said he disagreed with something like 80% of it when it came out. He thought it was a joke. They can claim all they want to that it was the wrestlers who made the picks. It was not the wrestlers' picks that ultimately made it onto the DVD. There's absolutely no way that any intelligent wrestler backstage would put Hulk Hogan at number 23 or 24 on the list, or put Ric Flair at 19, or whatever ridiculous spots that they gave these people. There's just no way. So, do I buy that explanation? Absolutely not. They're covering their ass. They made the picks, or Vince McMahon made the picks. It was a bullshit list. It might have been a good DVD. I didn't watch it. There might be some good stuff on there. But to me, that listing, that countdown, that top 50 list is such garbage. It's such a joke. The thought never even crossed my mind to buy the fucking thing. So, I don't buy that explanation at all. This question comes in from Mark. He was on YouTube watching the Randy Orton-Wade Barrett match from when The Miz cashed in Money in the Bank and saw something. The referee had gotten the three count just as John Cena had pulled him out of the ring. Can you think of any other times that a referee screwed something up? There are just dozens of examples of referee screw-ups, so I'll give you two. And again, these are only two. I know that there are more. Every time I answer a question like this, and I only give like one or two examples, you have no idea how many people email me and they go, "Oh, Solomonster, there's been more than that." Like, I don't know that. Of course, there's been tons. But the two that popped into my head, one of them there's still a lot of debate about exactly what happened in this match. But Starrcade in WCW, 1997, the Hulk Hogan Sting match, the big Hulk Hogan Sting match that they built up for months. They built that match up for over a year. And finally it happened. It was still, you know, it went down as the biggest pay-per-view business WCW ever did. The match did not live up to the hype. Sting, who should have come into this match and just been a monster, going crazy on Hogan in the NWO, took a beating in this match and never got his heat back. You know, it's one thing if you're a babyface in a match and the heel gets the heat on you and just beats you and beats you and beats you until you make your big comeback. And Sting never really had that comeback until the very end of the match. I mean, it just looked like he was getting his ass kicked by Hulk Hogan. That Hulk Hogan was tougher than him, was better than him, and was having his way with him. And before Sting could get that big comeback at the end, he gave Sting a leg drop, and referee Nick Patrick very calmly counted 1, 2, 3. Sting kind of went for a kick out at the end, but he clearly counted 3. You know, then Bret Hart came out. This was Bret Hart's first night, his first WCW pay-per-view. He had refereed a match earlier in the night. And Bret Hart came out, and the whole idea here was that Nick Patrick did a fast count, and Bret Hart would come out and say to Nick Patrick, "I'm not going to let you do what happened to me in Montreal," that is. And then Bret would punch him in the head, get in the ring, and he would officiate the rest of the match until Sting won, which is what happened. The problem is Nick Patrick, there was no fast count. It was clearly a very normal 3 count, and it perhaps was supposed to be a fast count, but it wasn't. And that's a pretty big fuck-up. That completely fucked up one of the biggest matches in WCW history. Bret Hart came out. He looked like a heel. Bret Hart comes out and punches the poor referee in the head. The referee didn't do anything wrong. That was a fuck-up. The other fuck-up, which wasn't a huge fuck-up, and it might not even be something anybody listening to this show noticed, but I did. I grew up a very big fan of Hulk Hogan versus The Ultimate Warrior. And to this day, it's one of my favorite matches. It's not my favorite match, but it's one of my favorite matches because those two guys went in there, and in my opinion, they overachieved. Nobody will ever argue that Hogan was the best wrestler ever, and nobody will ever argue that the Ultimate Warrior was anywhere close to being the best wrestler ever. But they went in there and had, at that particular time, what was a pretty damn good match for two big guys, especially two baby faces. You didn't see that very often. And it was champion against champion. Both belts were on the line. Warrior pinned Hogan and became the World Wrestling Federation champion. And the idea here was that Hogan looked like his dog had been shot. Okay, he just looked completely dejected. And Hogan would go outside, grab his belt that he just lost, come back into the ring, and hand it over to the Warrior. And the Warrior would embrace. It would be like a passing of the torch. and the Warrior would celebrate with both belts. If you really go back and watch what happened, when the match ended, Earl Hebner, ironically, was the referee for that match. And one of the first things that Earl did when the match was over and the crowd was going crazy and Hogan and Warrior were both still in the ring, he went and grabbed the belts and went to hand them to the Warrior. And the Warrior kept ignoring him, like he pretended he wasn't even seeing it. He didn't want to take the belts because he probably knew, and Hogan would have people believe that it was completely ad lib. Nobody knew that he was going to do that after the match, which is bullshit. I'm sure Warrior at least knew what was going to happen. But Warrior probably knew that Hogan was the one that was going to be handing him the belts, not the referee. So Warrior's going, you know, he's walking back and forth, his arms up in the air, he's celebrating. Earl's trying to give him the belts, and he won't take them. And the camera cuts away before you can actually see what happened, but it looked like Hogan was walking over. Hogan probably walked over and said, "What the fuck are you doing?" I'm sure he didn't say that, but basically took the belt, threw them outside the ring. Then Hogan climbs out of the ring, grabs the belt, brings it in. That was a fuck-up by Earl Hebner. Obviously, nobody clued him in on what was happening post-match. And, you know, it again, not a major fuck-up. It's one of those stupid things I think that very few people would notice. But I've seen that match and the end of that match so many times over the years that, you know, you can watch something 50 times and there are little things that you may not pick up on until the 51st time that you watch it. And that's one of those examples. This person writes in, he was very excited to see The Rock back on Raw Monday night. Most importantly, since he's writing in all caps, apparently he's very excited that The Rock bashed John Cena. And again, he wanted to know if I think we're in for a Cena-Rock match, what were my thoughts on the promo, and his comments about Cena talking trash about him in the past. Since I forgot to expand upon this earlier when I talked about Raw from last week, WWE has to, at some point, perhaps tonight they will, go on TV and explain to people what The Rock meant by that. Because you and I know that Cena had said things in the past about The Rock. In fact, I've talked about it on this podcast in one of the vintage episodes I posted way back. I think it was episode 17. Some of you still have it, I'm sure. You can go back and listen to it. There was an audio interview, which might still be available online if you look for it, that was done with the UK Sun website when John Cena was over in the UK. This would have been back in 08, I think early 08. Probably a few weeks before Cena made his big surprise return at the Royal Rumble. And he was asked about The Rock. I don't think he brought it up on his own. I think he was asked about it. And I included a clip of this in the sound off. I put the actual audio in my podcast of what Cena said. And Cena actually uses the F word, which is rare that you would hear Cena speak like this. But when he's asked about The Rock, he's basically, you know, he's upset that The Rock has not come back to television. You know, why can't The Rock come back? And Cena's exact words were something to the effect of, "Don't fuck me or don't fuck me over and tell me that you love this, being this business, when you can't even show up and make an appearance." This is what Cena said.
"Don't fuck me around and tell me that you love this when you're just doing this to do something else."
And I went on this whole rant because I remember hearing this and it really pissed me off. It's not that I disagreed with him. Like, I didn't want to see The Rock come back, and I did. I wanted very much for The Rock to make an appearance, and it upset me that he wouldn't come back on TV. But The Rock has his reasons. He's either very busy with movies, or at the time, there was bad blood for some time with Vince and with Rock because of how The Rock's contract expired. So as the story goes, The Rock had a contract with WWE that expired at the end of 2004. And obviously, I'm sure Vince and WWE wanted The Rock to do more, wanted perhaps to sign him to a big contract extension. I don't know exactly where things went awry, but all I know is that WWE let Rock's contract expire. They let it expire. They didn't talk to him about renewing it. They didn't talk to him about signing a new one. They didn't bring it up. "Hey, by the way, your contract is coming up. Let's talk." They just let it expire. And Vince spoke to him and claimed that it was a clerical oversight. It's a clerical oversight that you let the contract of one of your biggest all-time stars just expire without so much as a phone call or an email or anything. And The Rock took great offense to this. I mean, he was not happy about that. It was a disrespectful thing. And it's not that The Rock wasn't even planning on doing something with WWE. I mean, he was already thinking of ideas for WrestleMania 21 in 2005, possibly even wrestling a match. I think he had it in his head that that match at WrestleMania 20 was going to be his last match. So I'm not sure if it was for a match or if it would have been for something else. But he was already coming up with ideas for the next year's WrestleMania. And when that happened and they let his contract lapse, he took that as a slap in the face and he said, fuck this, I don't want to have anything to do with this company anymore. And that's why years went by and there was nothing between Rock and WWE. And then on top of all that, it was said that when Eddie Guerrero died, and a couple of months later, at the beginning of 06, they did that horrible, classless fucking storyline where, you know, with Ray and with Randy Orton, and Randy Orton said Eddie's in hell, and completely just tasteless bullshit playing off the death of one of their top stars. And Rock was good friends with Eddie Guerrero. He thought that whole storyline was completely tasteless. And even more so, at that point, he wanted nothing to do with WWE. He didn't want to associate himself with a product like that. That's why so long went by before he even started to tape some of those little segments, and eventually he finally decided to come back. So there were other reasons Rock didn't show up on TV, whether John Cena realized that or not. The thing about John Cena is this. John Cena did not make those comments on his own back then, and he did it more than just in the UK Sun interview. He did it in the UK Sun. He did it a couple of other times. People have to realize that John Cena was told to do that by Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon was essentially using him as a messenger boy. And from what I understand, it actually did get to the point where Vince wanted him to continue doing it. And, he had gotten wind of the fact that The Rock found out. The Rock did hear about these comments. And The Rock wasn't pissed off, per se, but he was amused by the comments that John Cena was making. He never really reacted to. People would bring it up in certain interviews with The Rock, and he would acknowledge it and say, yeah, I've heard it, I think it's interesting, and then he would move on. He didn't really want to comment on it. But Vince wanted him to keep doing it. And Cena finally grew a set of balls and told Vince, I'm not doing it anymore. And that's why the comments essentially stopped. So I ragged on Cena big time back then, and rightfully so, because I think it was still stupid for him to say that. And I wish he would have put his foot down and told Vince no, a lot earlier than that. But I can only blame Cena to a point, because his boss put him up to it. Vince McMahon said, listen, I want you to make, if it comes up or if there's an opportunity to bring it up and you're doing an interview, this is what I want you to say. We got to try to get under The Rock's skin. And I'm sure in Vince's brain, he probably thought, even if Rock doesn't acknowledge the comments or accept, he's probably planting the seeds for something down the road. And as it turned out, that's kind of what he did, because Rock finally came back last week. He made these comments about John Cena that has everybody in this frenzy, to the point where people are waiting now for Cena's response with bated breath. And there might have been something to that, although Vince is not going to get the match that he wanted. Again, Rock is not wrestling John Cena. But he did plant the seeds for what now is a somewhat exciting storyline. Now, as far as Cena and The Rock, I wasn't present when the two of them finally met face to face after all those comments, but to the best of my knowledge, there's no heat there at all. I mean, I think Rock pretty much understands what was going on, that Cena was not speaking from the heart, per se, that he was put up to it by Vince, and maybe even Triple H. That's what I've heard, but I don't know that to be a fact. As far as I know, in reality, things are cool. Things are fine between Rock and Cena. What you're seeing now is playing off of these quote-unquote real-life comments for the benefit of a storyline. And anytime you do a storyline like this, and Jim Ross talks about this all the time, this is one of the things I actually agree with Jim Ross about, that when there's a personal affair between two people, you can become more emotionally invested. When you have something like this that is not just your regular, everyday, run-of-the-mill bullshit WWE storyline, when there's an element of reality and realism to it, you get more excited, right? I think we can all be in agreement on that. It's more exciting. When Rock made those comments and there was like, ooh, the crowd was, taken aback by what he said, and everybody was like, oh man, I can't wait to see what Cena has to say. And we'll find out tonight because they're teasing that Cena will respond to The Rock. And again, I really think there may be some comedy from Cena. I'm sure there will be. But when push comes to shove and Cena cuts that first promo on The Rock, which again may happen by the time you've listened to this podcast, I fully believe that Cena's going to cut a real good promo. I really don't think it's going to be total comedy. I think we might even see some flashbacks to the old school, you know, Thugonomics John Cena. I don't know if he'll battle rap, but regardless, that's the deal between the two of them. But, you know, the other thing to remember here, and I kind of was saying this before, and then I lost my train of thought, WWE has to do something to explain to the wider audience what The Rock was talking about when he came out last week and he said, you know, John Cena's a guy that I met before, I thought we were cool, and he'd been talking trash about The Rock. Because the reaction from the crowd was almost one that a lot of people, I don't think, knew what he was talking about. So perhaps, you know, perhaps on Raw or as part of a video package leading up to Mania, maybe they can grab some of that audio from like the UK Sun interview and include it in like a video package and edit it, of course, and censor it if need be. But to actually show newspaper clippings or play audio from interviews that Cena did a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, bashing The Rock so people actually have a sense of what the hell he's talking about, I think that's something that they probably should do, because most people probably have no clue what The Rock is referring to. All right, a couple more here. Justin from Puerto Rico writes in, I was wondering, who do you think gives the best chops in the business? I personally am a fan of chop battles, and think the Big Show's chop gives me chest pain just from watching them. I would like to hear your feedback on this. I've been listening to The Sound Off since episode 132. We at my high school are big fans and enjoy listening to your opinions, and I mean the majority of my high school are fans. Wow, that's pretty cool. As far as the best chops in the business, go watch some videos on YouTube of Kenta Kobashi in Japan. I know that name probably means absolutely nothing to you, but he is probably, I guess, the best way I could describe it. I mean, to Japan, he probably is, you know, the Stone Cold Steve Austin, or maybe not even that. He's the workhorse, the Shawn Michaels of Japan, only bigger. He's a lot older now, and his career is if it's not over, it's probably winding down. I think he actually had a bout with kidney cancer several years ago that he beat, but he's had a whole host of health issues since then. So Kobashi is certainly not in his prime anymore. But Kobashi would throw chops the likes of which I've never seen before. And Kobashi actually came to this country several years ago. And by several years, I mean within the last 5 or 6 years, when Samoa Joe was still in Ring of Honor. And they built up this huge dream match. They brought Kenta Kobashi in to go one-on-one with Samoa Joe. And again, maybe that match is, I know ROH released it on DVD. You might be able to find it online. They had a chop battle during that match that was just ungodly brutal. As far as American wrestlers or WWE wrestlers, Chris Benoit had some wicked chops. I'm trying to think who else. Hardcore Holly, actually, believe it or not, had some pretty vicious knife-edge chops that he used during his matches as well. So, yeah, those are some of the names that come to mind. But if I were you, I would, if you're looking for some good chop battles, I would look up Kobashi. In fact, I think one of Kobashi's trademarks, and I could be wrong about this, was that he would chop somebody in the corner 100 times. So if you're really looking for somebody who gets into his knife-edge chops like no other, check out Kenta Kobashi's work in Japan. Ryan wants to know, do I think it's in bad taste for TNA to have a Eliminate the Hate campaign while their top star Jeff Hardy has a finishing move called the Twist of Hate? I don't see anything wrong with it at all, especially since Jeff Hardy is a heel. Maybe if he was a babyface, I would think it was a little hypocritical, but you know, to be honest with you, my political correctness does not stretch that far. I there's a lot of things I can fault TNA for. This is not one of them. I don't see anything wrong with that at all. Jim writes in, this would be Jimmy White from my Facebook, wanted to make a quick comment about the last show. Somebody had talked about bringing a sign to a recent WWE event. Jimmy is attending WrestleMania this year and the Raw following, and plans on bringing an SC Scoop sign again. He was the one, by the way, that had the SC Scoop sign at the Royal Rumble. I did give him credit for that on Facebook, but I don't think I did on the show, so I'm doing it now. See, he's planning on bringing either another SC Scoop sign or a Solomonster one. Well, go for the Solomonster one, man. You already did the SC Scoops one. He would also like to make note that he was the one that... Okay, I already mentioned that. Keep up the good work with the podcast. As long as you keep making them, I will keep listening. So thanks again. I mean, he really did a damn fine job. I mean, he had that sign up in some pretty visible... at some pretty visible moments during the pay-per-view, including during the Rumble match itself, before the sign got taken away. And people finally, on the production team, probably smartened up, or they typed SE Scoops in their browser and figured out what it was. At least with Solomonster, they probably won't have a clue what you're talking about. So you might be able to get away with that more than an SE Scoop sign. John Cortez, who's been a long-time listener since episode 17, ironically, which I just mentioned a few moments ago. He had a name for Dolph Ziggler. I neglected to mention this earlier, but it's actually not that bad. Actually, it is pretty bad. Cocky Climax was his name for Dolph Ziggler, which, by the way, Cocky Climax, I think I might actually like that better than Dolph Ziggler, but that's still a pretty fucking atrocious name. Come on. You can do better than that. Actually, that sounds like something Val Venus's son would probably use in WWE. Cocky Climax. John writes in, he is the Navy guy from an earlier email. Just thinking about this, several years ago, Fox aired a show called Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets, or something to that effect. His question is twofold. Number one, were any of the wrestlers on that show ever revealed? And number two, do you know if Vince McMahon or Eric Bischoff at the time had any reaction to this? I actually don't remember this particular show. I think I'm thinking of the one that NBC... Unless this is the one you're referring to, I think NBC actually aired a similar show many years ago. And I do know that Harley Race, of all people, was one of the... I think he was masked. I think his identity was kind of made to be a secret. But it was Harley Race, of all people, on that show, giving away some of pro wrestling's biggest secrets. And I think they talked about the stunt granny. Just corny, stupid stuff. But if Fox did one, I don't really have much of a recollection of it. And as far as I know, there was no real reaction from either WWF or WCW to any of these shows at that time. And really, I don't think it would have been a big deal anyway. I mean, by that point, wrestling was so popular and people were aware that it's entertainment. I mean, if a show like that would have aired in the early 90s or the late 80s, it would have been a much, much bigger deal. They probably would have even tried to get the show sabotaged before it aired. By the time the late 90s rolled around, early 2000s, I don't really think people cared. Most of pro wrestling's biggest secrets that they revealed on those types of shows were pretty common knowledge at that point anyway. NUFC Man 13 from SEScoops.com from the comments section writes in, I was wondering if you remember a few months back when David Otunga threatened to tell everyone the real reason that the old Nexus attacked The Undertaker. But as the Nexus has now broken up, and it also looks like Wade Barrett is not going to fight Undertaker anymore at WrestleMania, do you think WWE has just decided to phase this storyline out? If so, do you have any ideas what it was going to be about, or if it is still in the cards? I honestly have no idea. I have no idea what twist they might have had in mind, if they had even come up with one when they said that. Again, Wade Barrett and The Undertaker was a match that was penciled in up until just a few weeks ago for WrestleMania. And thank God Vince McMahon found religion and decided to change his mind, because that was not a WrestleMania match befitting of The Undertaker. And unfortunately, if that's the case, then it would appear as though that whole storyline has been abandoned. Now, if The Undertaker returns to Raw tonight, as everybody believes he is, and, you know, mentions Wade Barrett or David Otunga by name, and this storyline continues, I'll feel pretty stupid, but I'm also pretty confident that that's not going to happen. It's not the first time that WWE would have had a storyline and then dropped it without a resolution. And who's to say that at one point they won't circle back around to it? And perhaps we'll find out. But like you said, the Nexus has completely broken up. Otunga is still part of Nexus, but it's a completely different Nexus group. Him and Barrett are on two different brands. And I don't know that we're really going to hear more about that. Unfortunately, and I have no idea where they were going with it. Sky writes in with a funny note, not so much a question. Since Friday was SmackDown's 600th episode, he figured he would give some of his favorite moments that they did not show. Michael Cole getting puked on by Booker T after Rikishi gave Booker a stink face was his favorite memory of all, as well as Stone Cold beating the living shit out of Michael Cole in 2001 during his heel run. God, that was great. After watching half of SmackDown, I had so much bad heat on Cole, I just had to watch it. Even after seeing it numerous times, it still brought a smile to my face, both of which I posted links to on your YouTube. I assume he means Facebook by that. I remember Austin beating up Michael Cole, and I actually and granted, this was back when Cole wasn't nearly as annoying to me as he is now, back in 01, but I remember feeling sympathy for Michael Cole, which was the whole point of the segment, by the way. You know, if you had like a smart crowd, they would have cheered Austin. But Austin was really trying very hard, for as much comedy as he was doling out at the time. This was one of those times where he truly came off as a vicious prick. He beat the shit, quite frankly, out of Michael Cole. And he's talked about it before, that it was a real beating. He really stiffed him. Michael took it like a champ. But if you watch it, you actually get uncomfortable watching it. And again, it's a little... You'd be biased now if you went back on YouTube and watched it, because a lot of us don't like Michael Cole. So to see him get his ass kicked like that would probably bring tears of joy to our faces. But I just remember watching that and feeling sorry for the guy. Like, man, this is really rough stuff. He is literally getting the crap kicked. Like, crap is coming out of his pants. Like, he is getting the hell beaten out of him. That was just brutal stuff. And the stuff with Rikishi stink-facing Booker threw up on Michael Cole, that was pretty funny. Even Jerry Lawler, who was announcing ironically with Michael Cole on SmackDown at the time, started laughing, and Cole started heaving like he was going to throw up, and Lawler threw his headset down, and he was backing away, like, you ain't going to get any of that on me. Yeah, that was good stuff. And now that, you know, Booker T now is Michael Cole's colleague in the SmackDown announce booth now, and the way Michael Cole tends to commentate, it wouldn't surprise me if Booker T was to throw up on him again. Let's see here. When people discuss Steve Austin's failed 2001 heel run, why do few fans blame Stone Cold himself, as he was the one who pushed for it? Even though I wasn't watching at the time, others seem to feel that his popularity was a notch below what it was in 1998-99. And on Steve's interview on his 3-disc Legacy DVD, he states that that heel turn resurrected him character-wise. Well, I'll answer the second part of your question first. First of all, there's absolutely no doubt Austin was not as popular and was not getting the same exact types of reactions in 2000 and 2001 when he came back, as he did in 98-99 when he was at his peak. There was something missing. I don't know what it was. I don't know if... I can't put my finger on it. But I never saw Austin in 01 as a babyface, even before he turned heel and even when he turned heel. I never saw Austin quite the same as I did in 98 or 99. There was something different. There was something missing. You know, when he says that the heel turn kind of resurrected him character-wise, I think what he meant by that, I mean, you have to ask him, but his character as a babyface before he turned heel was feeling a little bland. It was not fresh. It was a little stale, a little flat, and I just took that to mean that it reinvigorated him by becoming a heel again. You know, he could be vicious, he could be funny. It gave him... It's a lot more fun, people will tell you, to be a heel than it is a babyface, because you have more freedom to do things, to think outside the box, to have more fun than you would as a babyface. So that's what I think he meant by that. Now, as far as why people don't seem to blame him as much as they'll blame Vince and the company, well, there's a very good reason for that. I think Austin did everything he could possibly do to get himself over as a heel. Like I said, he can beat up Michael Cole and do things, you know, pile drive Kurt Angle, who had a broken neck, and pile drive him on concrete on the exposed floor. You know, there were a lot of, you know, beat up Jim Ross and bloody him up in the ring on SmackDown. You know, there were a lot of dastardly things that Steve Austin as a heel in 2001 did, not just all the comedy stuff with Kurt Angle and Deborah, which was hilarious. Singing Kumbaya and playing banjo for Vince McMahon. Maybe there was too much comedy. The difference between that comedy and the comedy now is that comedy, if you go back on YouTube, go to YouTube, because I did this recently, and I sat here for an hour laughing my ass off. If you really want to get a good laugh, if your day or your week is going really poorly, go on YouTube and type in search terms to get all of those segments that Steve Austin did with Kurt Angle and Vince McMahon and Deborah McMichael back in 01 on SmackDown, all the comedy stuff and the cowboy hat and all that stuff. There was one great episode of SmackDown. It might have been the one where Tori Wilson made her first appearance since WCW folded. And she wants to talk to Vince McMahon about getting a job. And Vince, of course, he's blown away by how beautiful Tori Wilson is. And Austin is there. I think Angle was there, too. And Austin was playing this thing at the time where Vince McMahon was his best friend. And he wasn't going to let anybody else take any of Vince's attention away. And here's this hot woman. And you could see Austin was kind of bothered by this. And Vince, of course, wants some alone time with Tori Wilson. And Austin says, okay, sure, no problem. And for the rest of the episode, Vince, he's in the shower with her. He's trying to find these quiet places that he can talk to and probably make out with Tori Wilson. And Austin keeps popping up. Like, what's going on here? What are you doing in the shower? And Angle does the same thing. I have never laughed so hard in my life. This, looking back on this stuff, gold. Absolute gold. So if you want to laugh, look those segments up on YouTube. But the point is, Austin tried very, very hard to make that heel turn work. He never even wanted to become a babyface in the first place. That's the story he tells. And it was after Austin 316 and all that stuff, you know, Brian Pillman said to him, dude, you're a babyface. And Austin's like, fuck that, I'm not a babyface. He's like, yes, you are. And it just kind of went, the fans dictated that face turn for Austin. But he was always a heel and came up in the business as, I think, a face at first, but then he became a heel. And it was the natural role for him. So being a heel was never a problem for Steve Austin. The problem was, even though it was an idea that he pushed for, you can blame him for that, but he tried very hard. The fans just were not, they were never going to fully commit to booing him. A lot of fans booed him, but it never was going to work the way that they wanted it to work, because there are very few people in this business that become as big of a star as Steve Austin became. And it's very difficult for people to just forget about all that. You know, they wanted so badly to believe that the old Stone Cold was going to come back, which eventually he did. But again, I don't think he was ever the same after that. You blame Steve Austin for planting the idea that he wanted to go heel. But it's hard to blame him for the heel turn failing, just because he did everything he could to get it over. And fans were just, they could not do it. It's like fans now. They don't want to boo Ric Flair. Ric Flair should be a babyface right now. Ric Flair probably should have gone babyface with Fortune in TNA, and then it would have made for a natural feud again with him and Hogan instead of the two of them being on the same side. But Flair is so adamantly opposed to being a babyface. Even in WWE, he did not want to be a babyface. Now in TNA, he has the ability to say, I want to be a heel, and that's what I'm going to be. But people are never going to fully boo Ric Flair because he's Ric Flair. It just doesn't work. So, anyway, that's I think, why that didn't work out. Sam in Windsor, Ontario, Canada writes in, why does WWE refer to the Nexus still as the new Nexus? It's been a while now since they've redone the group. Why are they still referring to them as such? I have no idea. That's a very good question. I still don't know why they're referring to them as the new Nexus either. I think at this point it would be okay to start referring to them as the Nexus. There's nothing really new about them at this point. I agree. All right, let's go back to K-Fist here. He was one of the guys that had a Dolph Ziggler name, but I didn't answer his question, so I'll answer his last, and hopefully I'll get to some of your other letters next week since we're just way over time here. He wanted to throw a little bit of a different kind of question out there, an MMA-related question. He was interested in knowing my thoughts about Strikeforce's ongoing heavyweight tournament. Part of him feels like it was a backdoor means to flaunt their heavyweight division and stick it in UFC's face that they have enough heavyweight fighters to make a complete division, while the UFC really only has about 3 or 4 notable heavyweight fighters on their roster right now. He was also wanting to know if I think UFC would benefit from occasionally doing tournaments like this, at least for the nostalgia of it, since the UFC originally got its start from elimination-style tournaments. I don't think it's a backdoor means to flaunt anything. I just think Strikeforce is looking for something that works. You know, they're looking for a way to boost ratings, to get people interested in their product, and a tournament is a great way to do that. I personally am a fan of tournaments in wrestling and MMA. I'm a tournament guy. And one of the things that Vince McMahon and Dana White have in common is they're not big fans of tournaments. And that's why, again, in WWE, you don't see them a lot. Or if they do quote-unquote tournaments in WWE, they have like four guys. It's not like, here's a bracket for eight guys or 16 guys. They don't do that a lot anymore. They don't have King of the Ring as a pay-per-view for that reason. They don't think tournaments sell. Dana White has talked openly about not wanting to do tournaments because it's very complicated and convoluted, and it may require people to compete multiple times in one night, or people get hurt, and then what do you do? So that's why he doesn't like doing it. But Strikeforce is doing it, I'm almost positive, not as a way to stick it to UFC. You know, when you're number two, you're not in a position to stick anything to your competitor. You're in a position to do the best business you can possibly do. And I think that's really what they're trying to do. Now, that show that aired last week that had Fedor Emelianenko against Bigfoot Silva, where Fedor got his ass kicked in what might have been his last fight. Now he's saying he spoke too soon when he was talking about retirement, that he'll fight again. But the aura and the legend of Fedor, if it wasn't already, it was already damaged. But I think it was killed last week when he lost to Silva. Now they're talking about how, depending on how things work out in the tournament, they may potentially bring Fedor back as an alternate if somebody goes down to injury or something to that effect. But I think it's a great idea, and it's a tournament that Strikeforce is having over the course of the next several months. It can result in some interesting heavyweight matchups. I like the idea. I would like to see UFC do a tournament as well, but like I said, Dana White is less apt to want to do something like that. And in WWE, just to give a wrestling example, I was a fan of the Deadly Game tournament in 1998. I was a fan of King of the Ring as a pay-per-view concept when they showed the entire tournament in one night, not just the semifinals and the finals, which I think they started doing that in 1996. And I was not a fan of that at all, because it kind of defeated the purpose of even doing it, you know? If you look back at that first King of the Ring pay-per-view, Bret Hart took a beating that night. And when he won, he earned it. You had respect for the guy, because from wrestling Razor Ramon in the first round and having his fingers broken, he came back out later on. His fingers were taped up. He had a great match with Kurt Hennig, had a great match in the finals with Bam Bam Bigelow, had to wrestle three times in one night. Bam Bam was fresh. He had a bye. He only wrestled once. It's a great story. And when WWE started doing those tournaments and having half of it on TV and then the last half of it on pay-per-view, it just bastardized the whole concept. It was like, what's the fucking point of even doing this? But generally speaking, I love tournaments. So, there you go. That's going to do it for the mailbag this week. Answered lots of questions. Over 2 hours now this show has been going on for, so I'm going to shut up now. If you have questions, do send them in to thesolomonster@gmail.com. All one word, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Still the best way to reach me, especially if you want your question or comment on the air. And I have so many people posting questions and comments on my Facebook page. You have to understand, those things get knocked down off the front page very quickly. So again, if you want something or a question on the air, email me. You can follow me on Twitter. We're over 700 followers now, so I want to thank you all for that. Twitter.com/Solomonster. And so you know, I do post news bits and comments and updates on Twitter that I don't always post on Facebook. So you should get me on both. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is the place to go. And you can subscribe to this very show through iTunes, the iTunes Music Store. It is free, does not cost you anything. And you'll automatically be subscribed, so when the show is uploaded, you don't have to do anything. It will automatically download for you. And I myself am becoming more and more familiar with iTunes, being that I have no choice but to use iTunes with my iPhone now. And yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of iTunes like a lot of you are too, but it's still useful. And it's useful for things like this. So subscribe on there if you wish to do so. Hey, you know that glass they were using in the Elimination Chamber pods, now that I think about it, since it breaks so easily, you should start using that Gorilla Glass that they use for the iPhone. Maybe they'd have more luck with that. Enjoy Raw tonight. I'm sure by the time you listen to this, it will already be over, and we'll have a lot to say about 2-21-11 next week on episode 148 of the Sound Off right here on SEScoops.com. Again, everything with the website now should be good to go. And if for some reason the site was to go down again, if there was any sort of maintenance going on, you can always go log on to my Twitter or my Facebook if I am made aware of any updates. Because, again, I don't run the website. I don't handle the administrative part of the website. So when people email me complaining that the site is down, please understand there's nothing I can do about that. The webmaster is aware of that. But we should be back in business. Everything should be cool now. And we'll see you right back here next week on SEScoops.com. Thanks for listening, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solid Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.